For August the 23rd, 2013, I am joined by some very special guests to talk about Gone Home. Welcome to The Bonus Level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Bob Mackey.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
And my name is Zach Johnson.
And you are listening to a very special bonus level wherein we're going to talk about Gone Home. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me, kind of, and for joining us, all of us, kind of on a last-minute basis here. I think all of us played Gone Home here over the course of the past week and then just congealed over Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a game that I can't stop thinking about, so this is a good outlet to get all of that out, you know, maybe start thinking about other games one day.
Cathartic.
Very, very much so. So just, you know, by way of introduction, if you're, you know, used to listening to the show, you're hearing two voices that you really probably haven't heard on the network before or have heard on the network, I'm just going to go out and say it. Bob, you are from Retronauts.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is...
it's a classic gaming podcast every week. Retronauts.com, I guess, is the best place to go for that.
Cool.
Or iTunes. You know, you guys know where to find podcasts.
Yeah. You're pod literate. And Zach, you are from Video Games Hot Dog.
I am. It's less classic and more just sort of tasteless as a video games podcast.
It's a gaming classic podcast rather than a classic gaming podcast.
Yes. So it's a podcast gaming classic.
There we go.
Yeah. So, there's only one more permutation we could use there. Maybe there's not. I don't know. But less hemming and hawing. So let's talk about Gone Home. It is a spooky game about ghosts.
Let's do the spoiler.
Okay.
So you're being clever and I like it, but let's throw that out there. Yeah. Throwing that out there in the beginning is funny.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So if you haven't played this game, please go play it. It's really good. It is cheap as far as games go. And it doesn't take very much time. It's very much a worthwhile thing to have played, and we recommend that you go do that before coming back, because we are going to say things that are going to kind of color pretty much the entire experience here. So we don't want to take that away from you.
Yeah, there's no person on earth who should listen to this before playing it.
Right.
The less, you know, everything I read it on your Twitter, Bob, and everything, that the less you know going into this, the better it is. If you're scared off at all by some kind of, you know, Byzantine hour per dollar equation that you use, just try to shake that off and have some faith in you know, kind of in the people. So and we're telling you not to listen to the thing where we're going to, you know, going to praise this for you know,
just
an hour
trust
or so.
Us.
Yeah, please just trust us. So.
It is absolutely worth as much as a couple of movies, even if it doesn't take quite as long as a couple of movies.
Right.
Yeah,
I've been seeing people all over the internet actually talking about the sort of merit or lack thereof of evaluating something in terms of sort of the amount of entertainment you get out of it versus the amount that it costs. And it's been a neat conversation. It's cool that, you know, in addition to everybody talking about this game just because it's good, it's also sort of getting sort of both sides of it, right? There's people saying like, no, this, you should definitely pay what this costs because it's totally worth it. And then other people saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't be mean to the people who say that a 2-hour game isn't worth $20 to them.
Every time some kind of indie darling game comes out, whether it's, you know, an Xbox Live Arcade or Steam, one of these high profile things that isn't as long as, you know, like a 15-hour single player campaign or a JRPG or something, that conversation happens, and I'm kind of heartened because each time it happens, it gets a little bit more civil, and I think that people are kind of developing some kind of vocabulary to talk about it in a reasonable way, which is kind of rare.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's on Steam, so it's eventually going to cost $1 for a weekend anyway.
True, right? True.
Yeah, you're just paying for the privilege to kind of play it and talk about it before everyone else does.
Yeah,
you know,
right? Which as you know, as I mentioned, is important in this game because the longer you spend between now and when you play it, the more likely you are to have some of it ruined. It also with this game specifically, I think that there's an element where you can ignore the dollar per hour ratio out of just a real genuine intense desire to support this kind of thing happening and the people who made it, you know, so it, you know, I have no problem with it being as short just because I want to see these people do more things and see more things like it. Like this is a real dollar vote situation for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Just consider it a Kickstarter that has already been funded.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Like,
yeah.
It was interesting that they didn't do a Kickstarter for it. You know, I think they were probably wary of the scope getting out of hand, because I feel like they just sort of moved into a house and they had an X amount of money, which gave them X amount of time to work on it.
Stretch goals with like greenhouses and
sure.
Like, explore the high school if we get $40,000.
Dig an extra basement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even more emotional engagement down there.
The hidden sex letter if you... You know, at 75 grand, like,
I saw someone on Twitter complain, well, not complain, just make the remark that they couldn't jump, and I told them, you need the Moon Boots DLC.
So how do we even begin to start talking about the content of this game? I'm kind of perplexed about this, because my temptation is to jump right to the punchline, but I think we should deal with the setup a little bit first.
Just describing like what it is, or just trying to explain what it is, because I think maybe only one game exists as a sort of prototype for this, or maybe as a sort of other form of this. I'm sure there are more, but one is Dear Esther, of course. But yeah. I don't know if you guys want to start there or not.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. So you're walking around in a very lonely place. In this case, it is the house that your family moved into while you were away, spending a year abroad in Europe. And you are kind of looking around, trying to find clues about where they are, because the house is empty, abandoned. There are some cryptic notes that are left behind by your little sister. And really what you're just trying to do is get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. And that's you know, that's all of it. So, you know, that is the point of the game. And that is where, the mechanics in the game lie, is just the way that you interact with the world in order to uncover the narrative, and the way that kind of like narrative will express itself through, kind of the objects that we have around us, and you know, sometimes literally our words, but
yeah.
The things we surround us define us.
It's storytelling through personal archaeology.
Yeah.
It's sort of the only mechanic of it is environmental storytelling, and I think that, you know, some of it is like, and I think this is very direct. Genesis of this, the genitor is what I was going to say. I don't think that's a word. Progenitor of this is the BioShock games, which Steve Gaynor, the head of the studio, worked on. Specifically, I think BioShock 2, Minerva's Den, he was the lead guy on, and just thought, well, something that's really interesting about BioShock is wandering around this world and sort of piecing together what happened based on these audio logs and based on, you know, the skeleton hanging from the light fixture underneath the motorcycle, just figuring out what's going on based on environmental cues. And they decided to make a game that was just that, without all the tedious shooting 1,000 dudes.
It's a game where the primary mechanic is paying attention.
Yeah. Right. And, yeah. And I guess the objective is, although it's more of an internal meta objective, and that is to discover what has happened in the year you've been gone, and you do that through uncovering evidence of what has happened, but not in the order in which it happened. So it's all kind of like piecing together a timeline in your head with one main through line, and that is the story of your sister.
Right. So, go ahead.
Yeah, the reveals are set up rather than being chronologically. They're set up as, you know, as a novel would be. So the there are kind of twists to it, but the twists don't happen on a traditional timeline.
And the story of your sister, the story of your sister is delivered via specific sort of plot beats in what are audio logs. And I've heard someone say at some point that it's a little weird that this game, which is very much grounded in reality, has this, like, why are there these audio logs? But then, like, I feel like it sort of turns out that these are just kind of flash forwards to you finding this diary.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of the nominal end of the game, right? And you can turn that off, which I think was an interesting choice that they made to give you that option. Mm-hmm. But everything else, it's not only it's presented in a non-linear time fashion, but it's also really variable what order in which you're going to find them and which ones you find at all.
It is variable, but it's interesting because there's a degree of control of how variable it is. So there, I feel like there's definitely an intended order for the clues, more or less, you know, that you're going to explore in. But then did any of you guys play it with the option with the unlocked doors?
I didn't do that.
I didn't either. And it would really change the game if you were literally getting the clues in a random order, some kind of like Burrows, you know, kind of like cut up.
Right. I mean, if I guess we could just spoil things. I don't want to talk about the ending or anything, but like, I feel like the, I don't want to say gimmick, but the way the game misleads you is it it sets up a lot of stories that you just assume are going to have horrible endings, but you realize like everything has eventually turned around and is starting to become more hopeful as it approaches the date that you return to your home. So I think that the part of the guidance of the game is to sort of mislead you in that way.
It's like a double misleading, because it misleads you that way, and then it also is kind of like metatextual in that it's misleading you into thinking it's a different type of game.
Yes.
Like, there are a lot of like horror elements that they tease at, and even down to the font on the title screen, you know, the still shots that are on Steam make you think you're playing like a game.
It's a dark and stormy night in a house that is nominally haunted. Like, that's the reason why Sam is ostracized, is because she lives in the psycho house. That's primarily what you're seeing at the first part of the game. So it is taking, it's taking you on a very dark and scary path at the start.
And what's interesting about that in particular is that it does evoke that sort of horror stuff, but only the sort of horror that you would actually experience being in a dark, empty, old, huge house.
Right.
Where, you know, it has old grandma light switches in it, and, you know, everything is creaky and weird.
As a former coward, or maybe just a coward that's being rehabilitated, I know the sense of walking into a dark room, even at home, and just, like, rushing towards a light switch, like, in a panic. Just, like, I want it to be light in here, you know, and that's what I felt playing this game. Just, you know, an unfamiliar place.
It's interesting that they have an option to leave all the lights on to begin with, which I feel like is just sort of, it's like getting rid of the spiders in Skyrim. It turns all the lights into bears.
Like, well, you know, your parents are going through a rough time. Dad's having a work crisis. I discovered I'm a lesbian, and our house is lousy with fucking bears. Yeah, I'm trapped in the attic. They're everywhere.
The end of that Forest Service story took a real twist.
Yeah, she fell in love with a bear, and just like, you know, well, you know, you'll get used to it. He brought some of his rowdy friends. Oh,
sorry, honey, I cheated on your dad and then gave birth to a litter of bears.
Rick is bear for Rick. Yeah. the light turning on and off is one of my favorite things. So, you know, if you're playing this like as a video game player, you're probably going to be leaving all the lights on and, you know, all the doors open as you're going along. And there's a note that you find outside of Sam's room that says, "Quit leaving the lights on, Sam. You're as bad as your sister."
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
However, I eventually started closing all the drawers behind me and turning off the lights and closing the doors.
Eventually, I was playing this game and was thinking, you know what? When Cole plays this game, he's going to put everything back where he found it and close everything.
I wasn't like two. I got like two rooms into the first floor before I started doing that. Tidying
That's
up.
Very good. You're making progress.
Sorry.
I walked out today and saw Kevin playing it and just methodically throwing every object out into the hallway, everything that you could pick up. Rather, I thought it was neat that the game actually supported the way, you know, it's sort of like Half-Life 2's asshole physics, but it supports the way a normal person would do something, which is if you pick up a coffee cup and look at it, you're not going to just drop it from 4 feet above the surface that you picked it off of. You're going to put it right back where it was, right? And it just lets you do that, which is a sort of an interesting mechanic.
In an interview that came out through playtesting, people did not like the fact that they couldn't put objects back where they were, you know, as a normal human being would. I think that's a playtesting thing that they discovered.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to get into those, like, Skyrim vibrating, floating books and stuff like that. Like, you know, it could have gone. I mean, it also probably helped from a design standpoint, mm-hmm. too. Like, less glitchy. Yep.
If stuff was vibrating and floating, like, it would really be about ghosts, but...
Yeah, it's that uncle up to you.
But, man, there is an actual ghost story in this, which is crazy, but red herrings.
But it's like the sort of, like, fake ghost story that a kid would get into, you know, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is exactly what she is. Like, she is a kid who is into ghost stories. Like, all of the spooky supernatural stuff, like, is a through line through the whole thing. Like, the dad being into X-Files and the girl being a junior ghost hunter and everything. Like, it's the kind of story that Sam would like, mm-hmm. you know, within it, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, going into the game, like I said, I don't know if I said this, but I didn't know what it was. I just was told to play it. Do not read about it. Just play it. And I was intrigued enough to do that. And I was buying the idea that this was going to be a slight horror game, or at least have horror elements or supernatural elements, until I realized all that horror stuff was coming from the perspective of an 18-year-old girl. And then just remembering when I was a teenager, the dumb stuff I believed about aliens and ghosts and, you know, everything, because I think that's a phase we all go through at some point before we come to terms with it, you know.
Yeah. Mm. And they even go so far, you find the electrician's inspection, which says like, yeah, you know, the wiring's pretty shoddy. It's not a safety hazard, but stuff's going to flicker on and off, you know, just kind of like bringing, yeah. you know, like giving a little bit of grounding to what Sam might have been experiencing. However, that doesn't actually happen in the game, aside from when the lightning flashes. Right.
That some of the fixtures are going to occasionally moan about their unfinished business on this plane.
The land of wind, ghost, and chandeliers.
You live in the fixture house, don't you?
Yeah.
So I want to put it forward like a devil's advocacy question.
Sure.
Just to hear everyone's answer on it. So this is something I thought about Dear Esther that I think less about this game. But what is everyone's answer for why is this a game? Like, and not, you know, a poem or, you know, a very short story. And like, again, devil's advocacy, that's not my perspective. But I think that's something when you have something that's on the game narrative axis, where this is, you know, you kind of have to, it's important to kind of figure that out.
Hmm. I mean, I think for me, where this conversation has always led in the past is, all right, what's the difference between a choose-your-own-adventure book and a book? And it is that a choose-your-own-adventure, because it has a sort of branching narrative and a weird order of things, that it can really only be described as a game and not just a straight-up story. Like, it is categorically different than a thing that is non-interactive. You know, and I mean, a book is interactive if you consider, like, setting it on fire as an action that you can perform or whatever. But just fundamentally, you know... It's more of a game than Pong in certain ways. I guess not in certain ways also.
Yeah. I'm all this over. You know, I'm not the best person to like speak to this, just because I do really, really love Dear Esther. I agree that this is more of a game than that, because you're not just walking forward. I think it's the exploration, like the exploration and kind of the order in which not things are revealed to you, but you reveal things for yourself and kind of put the pieces together. If that was presented in a linear word after word fashion, I think that some of the tricks that they do with obscuring information and then revealing it, and then, you know, the big reveal, which is that this is a love story, I don't know if that would have paid off as much or with the same flavor as if you were not able to, you know, walk around and see the stuff, you know, kind of by your own volition.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what my answer would be as well.
Yeah.
You know, for that is that, and the fact that you have you have control over what bits of the story you see, you know, engaged me in a way. Like, I like Dear Esther a whole lot, and I'm not trying to set this up as a comparison, but, you know, Dear Esther reveals its story at kind of set intervals randomly.
Yeah.
You know, more or less. So it's like that, you know, I like Dear Esther a lot, but it felt significantly less gamey because there was no option for things to be left out. Exploring, you know, at this point, the story had engaged me such and gone home that I was desperate to explore. Like, I was turning over everything because I wanted every nugget.
Yeah.
You know, it got me to do something. And that, you know, the choice to do something was the big gamey part for me.
What I find interesting about the comparison with Dear Esther is that a lot of the stuff in Dear Esther was presented randomly. So every playthrough of it was pretty different, which made it mechanically unusual relative to this, right? You can't really 100% Dear Esther the way that you can nominally 100% this game. And I got to thinking, sort of, it would almost, because some of the most interesting conversations I've had about this game have been with people who missed or found different things that I missed or found, I thought it would have been interesting if some of the things just, you know, if the whole game worked like the Steam trading cards, like if some of the stuff just wasn't there for a given person, and not like critical details, but that would have been at least an interesting experiment to try and sort of engage a community approach to it, or at least prompt conversation about it.
Yeah. Are you guys at all familiar with visual novels, or do you have any experience with visual novels?
I'm raising my hand.
Okay. I mean, that's what I would compare this to, although you have a lot more control of what you see in, you know, you're not just being fed or led along a linear path, although you are being led along a path if you don't unlock all the doors or have those along from the beginning, but I feel like with a lot of visual novels, they feel the need to add gamey elements, which sort of detract from the overall effect. Like, I really enjoyed 999 and Virtue's Last Reward, but sometimes the puzzle would pop up and you're just like, I want to see more of the story. I don't want to do this puzzle, you know. And I think even with that game, you might be able to skip the puzzles, but still, this game had the confidence to not throw in gamey bullshit. And I think a lot of the game's surprises come from you expecting gamey bullshit but not getting it.
Yeah. The closest they get are the combinations and stuff.
Right. But even then, those aren't very far away from the things you need to unlock.
Yeah, true.
I was actually wondering about that. I didn't try it. Are the panels available before you find out about them, or do they only become interactable once you know about them?
I'm pretty sure you can open the panels and the passageways before you know about them.
I had heard differently. I think that the same mode that you unlock and the option to have doors unlocked includes the panels. So you have to opt into having the panels available before you know about them.
Hmm.
I see. I'm guessing it's like a Maniac Mansion thing where you need to power up Katie to open certain doors.
She lifts.
Yeah.
The split between player knowledge and character knowledge is sort of interesting. Like the sex note was, I think, a fascinating aspect of that, because it's like, all right, as the audience, I want to read this thing, but she won't. Right. Mm-hmm. And that I felt like that was just kind of a fascinating touch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's cool that you say knowledge. I was thinking about this too. We're almost as clueless about this environment as Katie is. She maybe visited this place. It's her uncle's house. But, you know, she doesn't know where things are at, you know, in this kind of version that her family lived in. So you're seeing this for the first time, just like she is. So that's a difference in motivation, too. You know, where she just,
I think,
like,
she probably definitely never was there, because you get the sense that Terrence was wholly estranged from his uncle after the whole molestation incident.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Also, just from, like, also, I think it's stronger if she was never there.
Yeah. I guess I was just acknowledging the possibility. Also, I never found the molestation stuff in my playthrough.
Yeah, I didn't either. I learned that from the Rock, Paper, Shotgun article DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I also never found that, and I've never learned it, and I'm just learning it now. So, I guess I've got some reading to do.
Yeah, real dark. But speaking to that, like, you know, just when you hover over things, you know, you get like a prompt that says, like, oh, you know, here's what this is. So, you know, just like Christmas duck, I'm gonna pick up Christmas duck and the keys under him. Neat. There are occasions where Katie's thoughts will be revealed by what she's hovering over, like when you find her dad's porno stash, and then later on Sam's porno stash, it says ew dad or ew Sam. So that is a nice little unintrusive way for them to read some of Katie's motivation in, when otherwise like she doesn't have a lot of characterization in this.
But I believe you can turn off those messages from Katie, the hover text.
Oh.
If you want to be a purist, I guess.
Yeah.
In my experience, at least, you learn far less about Katie than about any of the other characters. Like, right. there are some track trophies, and you know that you see these postcards that you've written, but I mean, unless I just missed a lot of it or just misinterpreted it from not being able to tell the difference between different people's names. But it seems like there's relatively little in the way of backstory for her. Yeah, and I'm sure that's a deliberate choice.
Like, the characterization for her is really deliberate. Like, the most, like, telling piece for me is when you find the same sex addict assignment that Sam did.
Yeah.
You find her version of it. Like, that was my favorite bit of characterization for her. Like, I'm like, okay, well, this, you know, sets these people up.
Yeah,
you know, really well.
Just going through the game again really quick before this podcast, I found a few more things, like some blue ribbons that Katie had won, and just she seems to be like a straight shooter, I guess, as far as academics go.
Right.
So yeah, so again, just throwing out, you know, I had a couple like prompt ideas for this. So like, what were you guys' kind of like choked up points? Like, are there like specifically emotionally resonant things that got to you? Because I definitely have very specific, you know, dude missed,
yeah,
you know, kind of areas.
Like throughout, I was generally wistful, but the letter from Terrence's dad about his book saying you can do better.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh my goodness. With it repeated.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
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 That's so cleverly revealed.
And I think maybe, we are a group of dudes who our life's work up until this point is stuff that a lot of people would probably call a waste of time. And so I think that specific sort of criticism definitely hit home for me. I mean, not with like specific experience with my dad or whatever, but
yeah.
But that was like, I can put myself in that guy's shoes.
Yeah.
The realistic portrayal of creative frustration, it just like stabbed me in the heart a million times when I was playing through it. Mm-hmm. And just knowing how long Terrence suffered through that is just really, it's really sad and touching how much he tried to make it work and how hard he tried to make it work.
Yeah. Do you guys, as a follow-up to that, do you guys feel like, what impression did you come away with once the kind of second run publisher, you know, he sends the letter to them to kind of continue the adventures? Do you think he feels like he's into that and he's like, you know what, this is what I've always wanted to do. Someone's giving me a chance. This is great. Or do you think he settled on this as a compromised, you know, kind of thing? Because he still has the note, you know, the text from his dad up on the note full of post-it notes and everything. Yeah. So I can still, you know, kind of hear that, but, and probably answer somewhere in between. But I wasn't sure whether to read that as a hopeful kind of thing or as like, oh, you know, like an extras style thing where like Ricky Gervais got his show, but it was like the genie monkey's paw version of it.
Did he write the new manuscript in that room with the bulletin board though? Or was there another desk set up where he wrote it actually? I'm trying to remember whether there were two desks with typewriters or not. I think that what I would have said is that the you can do better and all of the aggravated post-its and stuff were in the old room where he wrote. And although I guess he wasn't living in this house when he wrote all of the original stuff.
The the letter from the new publisher was by the garage for some reason. It was one of those notes that didn't really make – its location didn't really make a lot of sense if you think about it. It just was, you know, scattered there for some reason.
Yeah. And I guess the new manuscript, I guess because the game is trying to get you to find that later, it wouldn't be in the room that lets you know that the dad is a writer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, I got the sense from sort of all of the ending stuff that basically everyone had at the very least decided like, ah, fuck it, let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I feel and like not... the conclusion to all of their stories, it wasn't just a definitive, they were happy, you know, forever. And it was like, no, they have the opportunity now to be happy that they were robbed of before, they didn't have before.
I mean, extrapolating, when I imagine the kind of person that Sam is, I do not imagine her being the kind of person that is with their high school sweetheart 10 years later, right? And so even that, it was like, all right, well, this is just – what this is not like the culmination of this amazing love story necessarily, but just her growing up and leaving.
Yeah. Well, also, and like kind of like what Bob said, like it is potential for it.
Yeah.
You know? So the strongest, like when I talk about kind of missed points in this game for me, like one of the strongest emotional reactions I had, and I definitely had that kind of frustrated creative type reaction, but I can say without really exaggerating and the risk of sounding really cheesy that like this game kind of reminded me how fun and exciting it can be to be in love when you're that age.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Yeah. Like that, yeah. That killed me. Like the thing with the, where she's dyeing her hair, that like dealing with her roots thing, like that was just the first, like, so like choked up with this, that weird intoxicating, you know, just possibility, you know, the way that before you have to start thinking about like, oh, you know, this person's maybe going to want kids and I have to, you know, worry about where we're going to live. Like they just like an uncomplicated, you know, version of that emotion when it's just really fresh. And just the fun that they have, like their relationship is so well realized, you know, in their notes back and forth to each other. Like these are two people who make each other laugh like crazy and who are constantly introducing each other to like amazing stuff that they love.
So much of it was because I played the demo build that they brought to IGF. I played the first sort of third of it 4 months ago or 3 months ago and came back to it. But at the time, like, seeing the like collage on the locker made me think of the box in my garage that has a thing that looks almost exactly like that my first girlfriend gave to me in 1994. And it was like, it was so you're absolutely right about that. Like it was, I think I'm exactly the right age for that to have been a thing.
Yeah.
Just because those were the girls that I like the, I don't know that I like the music that was on the cassettes that were littered around the house, but I recognize it as the music that if you hear it coming out of a dorm room, that dorm room has the girls that you want to go talk to, as opposed to if you hear Pearl Jam coming out of a dorm room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never date a jammer.
that sense of discovery. The confusion that they're expressing, like, I kind of, you know, the second that Lonnie was introduced, you know, nominally, and not through the answering machine message, but, you know, actually saying, like, you know, you ever notice when somebody has, like, a gold star around them, it's like, oh, like, this is headed in an interesting direction. But just kind of the whole kind of, like, teasing each other and feeling, you know, kind of trying to feel it out and the uncertainty that's behind it. You know, that's kind of a really universal experience that they're tapping into. And yeah, that definitely resonated for me as well.
The physicality of the communication is interesting in that I think it sort of has to take place pre-texting, right?
Yeah.
Because I cannot imagine that people still pass notes like that. And I mean, so does every story like this have to take place in the 90s from now on?
I'm glad you said that, because I hear not a lot of people, but a few people saying a lot of the game's effect is nostalgia. And I will, you know, say some of it is nostalgia. I did have some feelings about the game based on having been a teenager in that time period. But I think the nature of non-digital communication lends a lot more to the storytelling, because yeah. It could be a game about looking through people's iPhones and emails, but it would not have the same connection. It would not have the same, you know, personal expression that you would see in a handwritten note or on a calendar or anything like that. And I do feel that the time period helps the storytelling be a lot more effective.
Stuff literally in the margins.
Right.
Yeah absolutely. And just in even down to pure nuts and bolts, you know, you have longer missives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you had text messages, they would be... Like, you'd have to find these logs that were back and forths and everything. Like, I feel like it's the only... I've read that too, Bob, where, like, some people have kind of said... Lamented the fact that this didn't come later because we're so digitally preserved now. Mm-hmm. Like, each of our computers carries a portrait, like an incomplete portrait of who we are.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to actually sit down and examine it, you know, if somebody gone home to my apartment, they would be able to find out a lot about me.
Yeah.
And some people, you know, wanted that completer picture, but it wouldn't, I don't think it would work, you know, whatsoever in that way. And I had tons of, you know, ridiculous amounts of nostalgia as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I actually really like the songs that are in this. Like that's, you know, that kind of like, mid 90s, like Riot Girl stuff, like I'm pretty into. So that was a nice, like bonus, just laser targeted.
Yeah, and I think you could make the claim that they were going for nostalgia, but there's not a lot of real world pop culture references, I guess, stuffed into there. A lot of it is just their own fiction from that world. And I mean, there are X-Files tapes, there's an X-Files poster, but it's not all just like, hey, you can watch an episode of The Simpsons and you can play Nintendo. And they could have done that. I guess they would have had to pay to do that, but it's sort of like a fictional world at the same time that kind of bleeds into our real world.
I mean, in another way, it's also just finally it makes sense to do a period piece in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so if BuzzFeed tells us anything, being a 90s kid is really, really popular right now.
Yes, retweet if you're a 90s kid.
Yep.
Everybody.
But it's also, like, pretty savvy. I don't want to cast any kind of, like, machinations on the creators, but it's really savvy from a market... So you think about a target audience for this game... Like, when we were talking about this tugging at our love strings, like, people who, you know, had their first feelings of affection when they were about 15 are going to identify with the cultural artifacts in this game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we're, like, the target age for it.
I'm, like, you know? I'm at the very, very bottom of that.
Yeah, you're a little bit young for it, but, like,
yeah.
I mean, you still are fine, but, like, early 30s is, like, what this and who this game is made for, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was 13 during the events of this game, or would have been 13, whatever, however you want to say that. But yeah, it was around the time that, yeah, I was discovering what love was and how it made me feel and all those other gross emotions that we're talking about today. I don't want to say gross. This game made me weep like a injured child. But
Yeah, I'm not ashamed to admit.
Yeah.
Ah, man.
Even though I knew they weren't going to do it, I still was nervous going into the attic. I was like, oh, God, no, they definitely are not going to put a corpse up there.
I wanted a like, run button so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
During too. That part, like, I kept holding down shift and it did nothing. Yeah. I was like, haven't these people played an FPS before?
Yeah.
I need to be able to sprint until my stamina bar goes down. Yeah.
I was.
Go ahead.
I was half expecting to see corpses hanging from the rafters. when you find out that the attic is the goal, essentially, you're just kind of like, oh God, nothing good happens in an attic.
Nothing but nooses and bears.
Nooses, one side to nooses, the other. Bears, and Anne Franks.
And unwanted sisters that are deformed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or brothers.
And Chevy Chase's home movies and Christmas Vacation.
That's right.
That would have been a good twist ending, though, as if you'd been walking down the hallway, suddenly Chevy Chase and a movie projector fell through the ceiling and killed him.
Oh. I don't know if this is just complete bullshit on my part, but when I got to the end, I feel like the twist is that there is no twist.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like I said before, I don't know if you guys want to go over this anymore, but you expect a game to do so much or at least fall back on so many ideas because it is a game. And in these settings, you're usually looking at things, going through people's houses and stuff because they've either been killed by zombies or there's been a nuclear war or you're in the future and you're looking at through like a past civilization. But in this game, it's just like, no, the people are gone. And that's it. There's nothing to it. And I saw people upset over that. The fact that there was no twist, that there was no ghost, there was no zombie. You weren't actually dead. There was no Twilight Zone style, twist at the end. And I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
Turns out you are Sam. What? Yeah.
I mean, there aren't any mirrors. You might be.
Yeah. The mirrors thing is actually really pertinent, especially in the hair dyeing scene where they're talking about looking in the mirror. What mirror? But I understand why. But still, yeah. I raise.
Duke Nukem 3D had mirrors, guys.
Yeah, I was about to say exactly that same thing, strangely.
No, Bob, I think that's like a real strength of this, and I think it ties into... So one of the things about the game is that it's not... It's playing into your lack of drama. Is it's not a dysfunctional family. Like, it is a troubled family in the way that is really well-observed and real, and not in the way we typically see fiction, in any way. Like, the stakes are kind of on paper and they're kind of, they're high stakes. In the world of video games, they couldn't be lower.
Yeah.
And that sense of low stakes is something that, like, I really appreciate, partly because of the context of the medium where you get to experience it so rarely. Like, the people who are complaining about that, I just feel like, go play any other video game.
Yeah.
Like, any other video game, you'll go save the world. Like, why can't there be room in your... Like, I mean, there's room in the market, because I understand that the game's doing, like, fairly well. But, like, why can't there be room in your heart for, like, one exception to that?
And for me, it wasn't just exploring the mundane that kind of touched me. It was also the fact that it had a happy ending. And I feel like that is now an edgy choice in a game, to not have, like, a Max Payne 3 or The Last of Us-style ending. Yeah. Or just, like, what have I done? What's going to happen next? Oh, God. It's just like, no. People are working through their shit. Mm-hmm. It might not work out, but you know what? They have the chance, and that's a good thing.
I can't think of a game that is more human than this. That is not to be, like, hyperbolic like I usually am, but, like, the scale at which this works is so incredibly personal that I can't think of something that succeeds as well as this does in that regard.
It's like a visual interactive fiction.
Right.
Like, I've played some interactive fiction games that are kind of akin to, like, a young adult.
Mm-hmm.
Novel, in the way that this reminds me of a little bit. And that's what it hearkened to me. Like, I've never played a game with a visual UI.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably
true.
That I feel
like is as, as grounded as this. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've said this before on Twitter and a few other places, but it feels like an epistolary novel, but with the additional context of you being able to explore the areas around those found letters and items. Like, That's not an uncommon way to tell a story through letters, like, Dracula. And some of the first novels were actually written in the form of letters, because otherwise people would not buy the idea that, why would you read about fake things that are happening? There had to be that context around them that gave them, a verisimilitude, can I say that?
Yeah.
But, I just feel like it is, it's a game, but it's also a new form of literature. I don't want to say that it's hard to say that without sounding like you're completely full of shit, but... I don't know. I have good feelings for where this kind of storytelling can take us.
Yeah.
Yeah,
me too. I'm excited for Gone Home to a Machine for Pigs.
in this week's level,
Uncle's Revenge. Yeah.
In this week's regular version of the level, I support the campaign to make every sequel a machine for pigs. So I'm just
Electric Boogaloo is just way overplayed, and it needs.
Yeah, and Back in the Habit had its day, but now.
Oh man, I like how they foreshadow some of the stuff in a way that makes a lot of sense a little bit later, like noticing all the electronics being gone.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I felt like a lot of those choices obviously were nice, like kind of Kojima style nods to why they made certain choices. Mm-hmm. Just like if we had VCRs in this house, you'd want to put, you know, VHS tapes in them and watch the TV. We need a reason for you to not do that, or a way for you to not have to do that.
Oh yeah.
I've done a lot of things in my real life with the Dark Crystal on in the background. So it makes sense that I would explore this house with the Dark Crystal on in the background as well.
As somebody who grew up in a household, my stepfather was just a rampant video pirater. The VHSs that were like Dark Crystal / Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 or whatever, those hit home in a big bad way for me.
Yeah.
I think of pirated movies as more of an 80s thing than a 90s thing, but I guess they were all still left over from the 80s.
Ah, true.
I mean, I was also someone who habitually recorded everything except all of my tapes for Mystery Science Theater. Like, everything was just TV shows, so I think my parents were more the movie kleptomaniacs. Not kleptomaniacs. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
They couldn't stop stealing movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tape with all the Simpsons episodes on it. Not all of them. That would be absurd, but, you know.
Yeah, tape the size of a city, Cole.
Playing this game and seeing the date it took place, I was like, I want to turn on the TV and watch a really good new Simpsons. Yeah. I could do that in 1995.
Yeah. Like, you know, season 5, season 6, somewhere around about them parts. Yeah.
I want to start calling people on the phone and spoiling The Wire.
Yeah. Yeah, you have no frame of reference for this.
In 7 years, get ready for this.
Yeah, there'll be a TV show unlike any other.
Oh, yeah. Man.
What could you even spoil at that point? Like Seinfeld? Like,
sadly, probably Friends.
Yeah, well, it's kind of pre-serialized drama, not pre, but kind of before that boom, like pre-Sopranos boom of that kind of thing.
Yeah, the golden age of television drama.
X-Files a little bit, but then, yeah, like X-Files is gonna get real bad, Dad. Yeah. Like for a little while, and then it'll get okay again. But watch out and don't get that excited about the movie.
I love the idea of a time traveler with incomplete knowledge of the 90s going back to 1995 and trying to spoil Twin Peaks. It's like, that happened like wicked long ago, dude.
It's going to take forever for this to come out on DVD.
DVD?
It's going to be a thing called Netflix. Yeah.
Buy stock in that.
Right away.
At this point, we're kind of going around the table saying what we do with the time machine. Has the discussion of Gone Home ended?
Maybe. So, I don't know. I don't really know if I feel like having the conversation about, like, it's like, oh, holy crap, it's a game about lesbians.
Oh, that's, you mean, scary. The internet idiot conversation?
Yeah, the internet idiot.
Like, the monsters with no hearts who post on message boards. Yeah.
The funny thing is, people that are really dismissive of the story, like, oh, it's just about teenagers in love, who cares? They are actually have the same attitude as the quote-unquote antagonists of this game, or maybe just the wrong-headed people. It's like, can't you see that is what the people in this game, at least the kind of authority figures, who are the problem, that's what they felt about this. And you're feeling the same way. Like, is there no insight here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be the equivalent of, like, if you were a real-life Combine soldier, and you're like, I hate Half-Life 2, just those uppity rebels. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard to tell, you know, like, when you find the letter that the parents write to Sam about, like, you know, you're grounded, you know, certainly you can't have your door closed when she's here. Like, I have trouble disentangling, like, do they really think that it's a phase? Because they don't strike me as being people who would be ignorant about that. Or do they just not want them around this punk girl who's, you know, helping her deface, property? And they're using
they think it's a phase. There's a Sam diary nearby that, like,
talks
about the discussion and stuff. So they definitely, I mean, I don't know if they, in their heart of hearts, think it is a phase. Mm-hmm. That's how they're presenting it. But there's a lot of restraint in how the parents are portrayed, because it would have been really easy to make them, you know, Bible thumping yeah. homophobic, especially when I found all the Bibles in the house. Like, the house, like, the two, like, you know, the number of Bibles in the house is unrealistic, even for a religious person. My favorite detail, though, I just wanted to mention this, too, is I love how many phone books there are. Like, you know how if you live at a place for a while and you just acquire, like, more yeah. phone books, and they're just constantly, like, piling seven on your door, and there's, like, I'll never do anything with these. But the, they did, you know, the parents, like, are just, you know, confused by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, know, I feel like it's... Their story is their generation kind of encountering homosexuality personally for the first time. I mean, I'm sure they know about it. I'm sure they might even have friends that are like that. But having a daughter, it might just be too much of a shock for them. And they're dealing with it as much as Sam is dealing with her own identity.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, to Katie, it's not a surprise at all based on, you know, the stories and stuff, right? Like, it's pretty clearly for real. And everyone can see that they're just kind of whistling past it.
Well, Katie knows. Like, in one of the diaries, you know, Sam says, like, you know, we've both known since She-Ra, like, you know, about this.
Yeah.
And like, one of my favorite details is, you know, you're finding this story that Sam has been writing since she was in second grade, right? What is it? Heaven at the end of the world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, foreshadowing, like, the idea of, you know, the hero and this person, you know, just traveling as far away as possible for some, you know, promise of something better at the end of it. But just, like, there's one of the last ones that you find is the first mate, who all this time has been a man, you know, like, doing this sci-fi gender switch. And it's like, okay, yeah. And then you find out that it's dated, like, a couple of years before this.
Yeah. What I've sort of forgot about this moment when we were talking about the sort of powerful emotional things, but the letter from the school about Lonnie having vandalized her own locker in response to somebody else vandalizing Sam's was, like, that was just a crazy powerful thing and a really great way of sort of telling that story without telling the story, just telling it in terms of the artifacts that would really be left over from it. And I thought that
you
was
can
fantastic.
Imagine what it was.
Yeah,
like, they, you know, they never actually say what the vandalism is. You know,
yeah, but I mean, you know what that kind of person.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know enough about who Lonnie is that you know what she would do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. Mm. I can't think of anything else aside from just, like, listing favorite artifacts, just in general, incidental stuff. The Lisa Frank binder in the upstairs closet, but
that was good.
Yeah.
There's a hidden diary. I didn't actually see what was in it. Did you guys find that? There was the 24th diary entry. I only found 21 so far.
Oh, I didn't even know that there was a way. Like, this game was so not like a typical video game that I barely paid any attention to any of the UI stuff. I think I didn't even know that there was a checklist of...
I only kind of did it after the fact just to see what I missed, because I wanted to pick up the story that I hadn't seen yet, or maybe, you know, just whatever I missed.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. I'm like Zach, I didn't notice it was a thing. I knew, you know, at some point, the same way when I'll feel like reading, you know, the short story again, I'll play through it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize the whole, like, that reveal earlier about molestation stuff. Like, part of me wants to not, like, I'm bothered that I didn't get the complete story. Part of me doesn't want that darkness in there.
Yeah.
Like, my version of the events.
Yeah.
And I think the game is smart because they're not like, you found diary entry 1 of 14. Good job. You know, it's just like,
noise.
No. Oh, thank God there were no achievements associated with this game.
Yeah.
Zinester.
But I did make 36 cents off of the trading cards.
Yeah, no, my four copies of good old Christmas Duck fetched nearly a dollar.
Yeah. Okay, like, what was this hidden diary entry? Did you see what the content was, Bob?
I didn't. I just heard about it, and I know you have to do something strange, like dislodge a basketball from the rafters of the garage or something like that.
Jesus.
It was meant to be hidden, and it might even be a joke entry, just a bunch of nonsense, but that
turns
just came
out.
There's
a dog controlling the whole thing.
Oh, God, no. Yeah,
please,
I'm kind of addicted to the thread, so I'm trying to figure out everything I can that I haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm. So do we have any kind of, like, final thoughts? I don't want to, like, rush us to a close, but I feel like we've covered a lot of ground here.
I mean, my final thought would be to tell everybody to play the game, but they can't have listened to this without doing that.
Yeah.
It's ruined.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, just start drinking a lot if you listen to this first. Maybe you'll forget.
Sure,
The equivalent to that, Zach, would be if you're listening to this, tell your friends to play the game.
Yeah. Okay. Oh,
because
there
you
go.
Played it.
All right.
Yeah, but, you know, be evangelical about this, because, like, at the risk of, you know, whenever you start getting to the, like, the future of the medium and stuff like that. You risk coming off like a real douchebag, which I don't want to do. But this kind of thing is good for video games. Like, the more, you know, nothing gets taken away by having more diversity in what a game can be defined as. We only gain things by having more things under that, you know, in that box, I think.
I meant to touch on, Cole, something that you said on Twitter, which was that, too bad, I'm not going to be able to read anything about this on the internet. And I have just not even bothered reading the comments on anything about it, because I made the mistake of reading all of the complaints about the feminist agenda pushed by the Polygon writer who wrote the review or whatever, and it's like, Jesus Christ, why did I scroll down? and that is kind of a shame, but I guess it, you know, with something about this, like, you sort of have the advantage of, like, anybody who has anything really significantly negative to say about this game, it is pretty easy to just write them off as not having a heart. And so it's kind of fine, right?
Yeah, totally. I've gotten to that point in my personal life where there are certain issues that I don't see as being arguable to any degree, and it just, you know, it kind of becomes a deal breaker. Like, I don't know how to talk to somebody who doesn't think that gay people should have the same rights that we do. Like, what does
somebody
that mean?
Who,
like,
doesn't acknowledge that Jesus Christ is our Lord and Savior and
only talk to
path to
like
salvation?
That?
Yeah, you just don't.
he's fucked anyway. Like, he's gonna get all
more room in heaven.
I told a friend before you play this, you have to be comfortable with having emotions because this game is going to make you feel them. And some people are not comfortable with that, and I think that's the main issue.
Mm-hmm. Even just in a video game context, like, cool, like David from the regular The Levels, you know, he talked to several times where he said, you know, this is what I want from a video game. Like, I really want an explodey, you know, action, like, kind of empowerment experience. And that's fine if that's what you're looking for. But something I strive, you know, in life is, like, I can have an opinion about something, but don't try to take something away from someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to go on a board and ruin someone else's enjoyment because I wouldn't enjoy it. Yeah. And I'm not, David doesn't do that. I'm definitely not saying that. I'm just saying that people who only want one thing from a game, let other people want other things. Mm-hmm. It's not hurting you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
I'm not upset that this wasn't a survival horror game. But, wait a second. I would not have been upset if this was a survival horror game. I'm really, really happy that it was not.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I would have been. Weird. Yeah, I would have been upset because it would have. I mean, I guess I would never have known.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that this is even a really, really well articulated survival, like, low key survival horror game, which someone should make. But I would have been robbed of this, which is I wouldn't have changed this.
Like, I would not have known that there is a world in which this would exist. No. Yeah. So you're saying the
exact
same thing.
You can say that about anything.
Yeah. Like, but it's just kind of like, if this was what I thought it was going to be when I walked into it, I would not have been upset. However, I'm very happy that it took it and made it into a love story.
One thing I want to say before we end this is that there's this weird line of thought that's happening, and I hear it a lot coming to this next generation of consoles, and that's mainly from David Cage, but some other people are saying this too, that, like, in order to connect with video games, we need more graphics. More graphics equals more emotions. We need a motion capture Ellen Page. Get a friggin', who else is in that stupid
Defoe.
Beyond game? Willem Dafoe. Get him in there. Then we can finally feel emotions. No. This game is remarkably low tech. You never see a human face outside of flat, static images. But I have not been as emotionally affected by anything been in the video game format ever. And it's astounding that technology doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. The Matrix fights in Indigo Prophecy didn't make you feel anything.
Made me feel like that, throwing up.
Yeah, that guy, that's nuts. I haven't read him like say that recently because that drives me crazy though.
That's basically his defense of the future of his career. It's like, no, let me keep doing this. Eventually I'll make you feel an emotion. We're not there yet, people.
Yeah,
how many chances am I supposed to give you, buddy?
He's on, like strike eight now.
Yeah, that's insane.
To be a little bit of a contrarian about that, though, I did, in spite of myself, it bothered me a little bit whenever I opened a drawer and there was just, like, a texture that was a photograph of some clothes in a drawer. I was like, I would almost rather have that drawer been empty. And I feel like an asshole I felt like an asshole at the time for thinking it. And I feel like two assholes for saying it now. But it was the one thing that was just like, that is just a weird, it's like suddenly there is a part of this game that's, you know,
right.
An Atari game or something. It was strange. It was incongruous was all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like with something like Heavy Rain, all of, like, they used a ton of outsourcing just to model objects, and a lot of people are doing that. Like Ubisoft has 40 different branches to model like the different pots and pans and, you know, chairs you see. But I mean, just going into this knowing, maybe the one thing you should know is that four people made it, that might help explain a lot of the technical shortcuts and maybe the general sparseness that is sort of justified through the story.
My assumption was that it was just a poly count issue, because they had a lot of like pieces of clothing and stuff that you could pick up and move around. And I wonder if they just didn't feel like it was worth it to slow the game down on weaker hardware by rendering.
You would look under each piece of that clothes for a letter.
I guess that's another very good point, actually. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. Well, never mind. Now I feel like three assholes, Gary.
Because like sometimes there'll be a drawer full of notes, but only one is not a texture. Only one will be something you can pick up. And I think it's just because like maybe Katie's brain disregards that as something that's not worth examining.
Mm. Okay.
Like, I don't want to sift through these socks because what the hell am I going to find in here? Because
they're socks.
Yeah, they're just socks.
Sam, before she left, she stole all of the AV equipment that her dad was reviewing. She also glued everything down that wasn't relevant to you just so you could find her notes.
Yeah, you call this a phase. How about the phase where you guys can't get dressed without getting some turpentine out?
Good.
Huh, Pops?
And I'm sorry if I keep going on, but I thought of one last thing. How amazing would this be if the Gone Home house was recreated as an art installation? Like, they just reenact the game for 3 hours, just, like, send you into that house. I guess you would have to not know about the game ahead of time, but I think it could work like that. It could also be an art installation and some fancy
speaking
pants.
So on that, you know, that connection to BioShock, the first time I went to PAX, they were showing BioShock 2. Were either of you guys at that? Did you remember that, how they marketed that?
Nope.
They set it up as a detective's office, and it had a record and it had files and it had a notebook and it had clues, and that was it. There was no one showing it off. Like, there was another room where people were showing the gameplay.
Yeah.
But the detective's office, you were just left to wander through.
I really like that.
It was amazing. I would if there was like a market for that, like as a year-round haunted house, and like in October it gets super spooky. The rest of the time, it's just that. Like, that's my favorite thing in the world. Like, I love exploring false, like, artificial spaces.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a real-life Escape the Room in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, it is less atmospheric than gamey. It's awesome, but it is not precisely like this. What Bob said reminded me of an art installation that I saw, I think, in L.A., and it was like before I had the presence of mind to like write down who made it so that I could see what else they had done. But it was just in this museum, there was like one corner of it was just sort of enclosed. And when you walked in there, it was like just a preserved garage from like the 40s. And it was just filled with weird, you know, like workbenches that were set up like they had just been there since the eccentric old guy that lived there in the 40s was there, and you couldn't really touch anything or go through anything. You know, everything was kind of fenced off, and you know, you obviously, the public can't be trusted with unfettered access to physical objects. But no, it was, I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but it was really just, you know, I don't remember anything else that was in the museum at that point, but that was just such a fascinating thing. And Gone Home really was sort of a realization of that. That was interactable, and it could be more about you, you know, because you don't, you know, when you open a drawer and leave all the lights on, it's not on for the next guy to come through there, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that reminded me of, just a real vague tangent, but something that we said in a Watch Out for Fireballs when we did Vampire Bloodlines, is you go to the Oceanside Hotel, which is, there's so little game to that. Like, it's a haunted house and there are ghosts that don't hurt you but pop around. But it's really just exploring and piecing together the story of what happened to this hotel before you get there. And like, I would love to have a game that is like 10 really well-crafted houses with a story. Like, maybe not as this caliber, but that was something I thought then, you know. And I feel like this is kind of like the what I didn't know to ask for when I was asking for that.
This makes me want to have the patience for interactive fiction. Honestly, like, I like it, like in an actual, like, sitting down with an iPad with, you know, frots on it.
You can't do it on a virtual keyboard. Maybe if you didn't grow up with it, you can't do it at all. Like, it's such a weird vocabulary, and it's such a kind of a tiresome thing when it's not done well.
Yeah.
And
Have you ever seen that documentary, Cole, that I bring up all the time?
Oh, yeah, I love that. That? Yeah,
yeah. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I find that, though, interactive fiction is sort of being dressed up a little more now with things like digital, a love story, and analog.
Yeah,
I believe those are sort of like interactive fiction, but there's sort of an interface with them, too, sort of I guess, make it a little more accessible to people not used to that format, that genre.
Yeah. I've got that, that and Trauma. Man, I really wish there were more of those kind of games. I eat them up.
I've got Trauma too. I haven't picked it up yet.
Yeah,
started playing it, but I've got it.
The new one, the digital that just came out, right? I'm seeing it on Steam every once in a while.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, do we want to button it up?
Sure.
Well, thanks so much, you guys, for you know, hopping on the phone here to talk about this game. It's been incredibly fun. Instead of doing like a full on admin, let's just kind of like restate where people can find us. Why don't you go ahead and start, Bob?
Okay, I am Bob Servo on Twitter, BobServo. I write occasionally for a bunch of sites. Just look at my Twitter, and I'll let you know where I am. And also, please subscribe or listen to Retronauts. And we're also at Retronauts.com or Retronauts on everything. We just do a classic gaming podcast every week, and you should enjoy it. And a lot of people give us money for it, if that makes you feel any better.
Zach?
I'm Zach Johnson. You can find my podcast, Video Games Hot Dog, at videogameshotdog.com. You can find my day job for the last 10 years at kingdomofloathing.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Zap Jackson.
Yes. Also by Word Realms.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, somebody might as well.
And
you know who I am.
Yeah.
I do shows with Cole on the network.
Yep.
If you want to find me on social media, on Twitter, I'm Gary Buh, B-U-H, on Twitter. And listen to Pilot Season every other Monday.
Yeah.
Coming soon.
That one's coming out. First episode features a bunch of people from the network. And by a bunch of people, I mean three.
So, this upcoming Monday from wherever this comes out.
Yeah. And, just in general, duckfeed.tv for all this stuff. We put out way too much content every single week. So, yep. At Cole Ross on Twitter. I'm kind of running out of steam, guys. It's been a long day. So why don't we go home?
I've already gone there.
Let's do the sequel, Stay Home.
and then number three, Stay Alive, featuring Adam Goldberg.
Dun, 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 dun.
If you die in the game, you die in real life.